Hello and welcome to Positive Thinking, the series that sets out to find the world's brightest ideas that could make Britain better. Each week, we hear from different innovators trying to solve a different problem. This week, we're bringing you not one, but two competing ideas. We'll explore both approaches, asking whether they can work here and to scale, and we'll have to decide which is the more effective. This is Positive Thinking.
Hello, good evening. None of this is normal. It's not normal to have unemployment at 2.8 million as it was in May. It's not normal to find the government spending 190 billion, nearly 10% of GDP, responding to a pandemic. It's not normal to be invited out to dinner with...
It's worrying, isn't it? The rate and scale at which people are losing their jobs because of the pandemic. Personally, I can't remember a time that the fear of unemployment has affected so many friends and family so fast. Offering reassurance is difficult when the big picture is just so uncertain. Latest figures show that the UK economy has shrunk by a massive 25% in the first quarter of this year. The number of people on work-related benefits has more than doubled to 2.8 million since the beginning of lockdown. A total of 11 million workers, that's more than a quarter of the workforce, are currently furloughed on one of two government schemes. Both end in October. After that, we'll find out which businesses have survived the pandemic. The threat of large-scale unemployment has led the Chancellor to announce a raft of extra measures to avoid that cliff edge in October. So, today's question is a biggie. How could we create or save jobs in the midst of the worst recession on record? Gemma Tetlow is chief economist at the think tank, the Institute for Government. I wanted an expert view on the looming jobs crisis and how it might compare to previous periods of unemployment.
If we look back over the last three recessions...
...is in its worst recession since the 30s. Sunset industries are dying. The sunrise industries of high technology have not yet taken their place.
In the 1980s and 1990s, unemployment was very high during the recession in the UK. So in the 1980s, unemployment rose to almost 12%, or 3.3 million workers unemployed. The peak in the early 1990s was slightly lower than that, but still over 3 million workers unemployed.
Credit crunch doesn't seem to be getting any better. In fact, if anything, it seems to be getting worse.
The financial crisis, in contrast, was slightly different. Unemployment didn't rise so much. It peaked at around 8.5% of the workforce unemployed, or around 2.7 million people. Instead, there was much weaker wage growth during the financial crisis and after the financial crisis. The real problem with the early 1980s recession in particular, and what the government will really want to avoid this time, is that in the early 1980s, many people who lost their jobs then never went back into work. This time, the government will want to make sure that people, as quickly as possible, retrain if needed and find jobs in new sectors of the economy.
Gemma, the future is clearly very uncertain. How reliable are economists' forecasts of unemployment? Because I've seen figures go from 3 million unemployed all the way up to potentially 9 or 10 million unemployed.
All economists' forecasts, it's always a difficult thing to do. It's particularly difficult at the moment because there's so much uncertainty about what government policy is going to be. What the government decides to do next really will have a huge impact on what happens to unemployment.
For some people, the predictions of job losses are already a reality. 26-year-old Matt Blades worked in one of the worst-hit sectors, aviation.
For me, it was when I was 11 or 12, I went into the cockpit of a plane when going on holiday, and I was hooked from then on in. My first flying job was with Flybe.
On March the 5th this year, life changed for you, literally overnight.
On the afternoon of the 4th, a couple of news and media reports came out saying that it looked like Flybe were going to struggle to make it to the end of the month. And then it got to about 3-4 o'clock and it changed to end of the month to end of the day. And then it was a case of, OK, that then really hit me, going, I think I've just lost my job here. I was completely heartbroken. Emotionally, that night, I was just a ruin.
How do you feel right now
about your prospects on the jobs market?
If I'm honest, I feel slightly scared. I know that I'm going to have to get a job. And it doesn't matter what it is, the bills still need paying. It looks like there'd be millions of people in this same boat, and the competition's going to be really high to get any job at all.
26-year-old Nancy Potts graduated from university 2 years ago. Since then, she's struggled to get her dream job of being an interior designer and has survived doing low-paid, casual work in the gig economy, all of which has already dried up.
Low-paid, unskilled, temporary work, it wasn't fulfilling at all.
How do you feel about the future and the possibility that we could have a sharp rise in unemployment?
Well, on a selfish point of view, it's terrifying. I'll find it even harder to get a job. Other people find it harder to get a job. And there'll be more exploitative employment practices. I don't think it's going to go well. I'm scared.
What's all this done to your confidence?
It's really, really very hard. To be very frank, right now I've put on a professional persona that's very forthright and confident. It's the sort of persona I put in job interviews. But most of the time, I'm despondent. It's horrible to live with. You feel like a failure and you feel guilty for not being able to get a job.
So, what could help create or save jobs for people like Nancy and Matt? Well, the first of our solutions comes not from a single innovator, but courtesy of the German government. And it's not new. For around a century, German employers have, in times of economic crisis, been able to rely on a scheme called Kurzarbeit. The pioneers of Kurzarbeit are long gone, so we've appointed an advocate. Wendelin von Bredow is the European business and finance correspondent for The Economist, based in Berlin. She explains why the Germans love it.
The very beginnings of Kurzarbeit were in 1910, so when the Kaiser was still on his throne, presiding over the German Empire. But it was really expanded after the defeat in the First World War, which was followed by a great economic hardship.
Very simply, are you able to explain how Kurzarbeit works?
It means that if a company has to reduce or even stop to produce, the state will pay the bulk of its workers' wages, the ones that are registered for Kurzarbeit. In normal times, it's 60% for employees without children and 67% of the wages of employees with children for a limited period of time. That's why it's a short-time work scheme. The maximum you can do it is 1 year. And after that limited amount of time, the idea is that the job is saved and the company can continue doing what it did before.
Are you able to summarise for us, from an employer's perspective, what the benefits of Kurzarbeit are?
I mean, assuming they want to keep their workers and they just can't afford at the moment to pay them, it allows them to keep them on and to get going as soon as the economy recovers, you know, rather than having to rehire people and look for qualified staff.
Here in Britain, we've experienced something like it with the furlough scheme. And one of the big criticisms of the furlough here in the UK is that there's a hard cliff edge. So once the scheme stops, it's unclear whether or not companies will survive.
Yes, and I think that's an advantage of the German scheme in the sense it's very flexible. You know, you can also just work some hours or very reduced hours and the state will only pay some of your wages. So that makes it very flexible and the company can really adapt it to its needs.
From an employee's perspective, it seems to me, and I may be wrong, that Kurzarbeit really benefits those who have long-term prospects in a single company rather than casual workers in what we call here the gig economy.
Yes, of course. You're mentioning an important point because the gig economy workers are hardest hit because unless they have a way of somehow being attached to a bigger employer, they do not qualify for the scheme. I think Kurzarbeit is a good idea as long as it is actually limited. It should only be a temporary, you know, a short time scheme, because it can't become a permanent feature of the economy that the state is paying wages. First of all, it invites abuse, and then you're basically, the risk of nurturing uncompetitive companies is too high.
So I think what you're arguing is that Kurzarbeit offers employers and employees a sort of gentle slope out of work and back in when the economy begins ramping up again.
That's right.
Can you tell us how effective it's been in recent months?
It's been effective because there's no mass unemployment here. Unemployment has gone up a little bit in Germany, but not dramatically. At the peak of the global financial crisis, 1.5 million workers were on Kurzarbeit, as you said. Now it's more than 7 million. So the model has never been tested at such a scale. So we will see, you know, whether it'll work well, because during the global financial crisis, and in particular afterwards, it worked because Germany suffered a nasty recession, but not many jobs were lost. And so, of course, the hope is that we can replicate it. And that again, in a couple of years' time, we will look back at the time of the COVID-19 pandemic and say, oh, gosh, you know, it was very hard, but at least not many jobs were lost. Well, that's the hope, but we don't know yet whether it'll work out that way.
So, is Kurzarbeit a solution that could soon prove out of date? The UK labour market has changed. There's been a big growth in gig economy jobs, and attitudes to work are also changing, with many younger people no longer expecting a job for life. Could our next idea provide a more modern answer?
Inspiro began as a group of freelancers and activists in Wellington, New Zealand, who wanted to work collaboratively and have a positive social impact.
The Inspiral Foundation is an international community of about 200 freelancers who encourage each other to create work for themselves.
Collaborating online using digital tools and offline in a shared co-working space and at regular retreats.
Teams come together around inspiring ideas and launch social enterprises.
Inspiral Ventures. So, Rich, I'm very excited about your idea.
That's good to hear. I hope there's something about it that can translate for a bigger audience than the kind of freaks and radicals that I'm used to.
Richard Bartlett is a director at Inspiral and set up two businesses through it. Richard, what I'd like to do is take you back to 2008, when you first graduated and you got your first job.
So I just graduated with an engineering degree, found my way into an engineering firm, and I felt like I'd found my place in a sense, or that I'd had some sense of achievement after all of the schooling to, like, okay, now you've got a real grown-up job with other grown-up engineers. We had, you know, the financial collapse, and so that was a very short-lived dream working with that firm. Losing that first job really left me in the lurch, like, what? Done everything the right way, and then I was kind of spat out into a world that didn't really have a meaningful place for me.
So by 2011, Occupy Wall Street, those protests, those anti-capitalist protests start sort of seeping into the news agenda.
A protest against capitalism and corporate greed took off. It became known as Occupy Wall Street.
That became quite a turning point for you, didn't it, in terms of Inspiral?
Well, one of the things that attracted me was that it was leaderless, you know, like this idea that we don't have a representative, we don't have a boss, we're going to figure it out together. We're going to do some kind of democracy in the streets until we figure out what we're here for and how we're going to achieve, you know, what our vision is. Coming out of that, I had this energy of like, wow, there was something great there and I want to share it with people. And just by some fluke, I got to meet a bunch of people from Inspiral while I was in Occupy, and I was just sharing some of my enthusiasm about the collective decision processes that we were using and how organizing in this collective way was really exciting. And we got talking about, hey, maybe there's an opportunity here to make a small company to produce a piece of software that helps with collective decision making. The company was successful. We got some funding. We could employ people and I could finally get off the benefit and be on my own two feet and say, this is my job and I made it on my terms. No one gives you a job at Inspiral. You have to like invent your own job. It's up to me to like get motivated, get energized, get in action and do something. And there are people here that are going to support me to do that, but they're not going to tell me how to do it. The first people that were called into Inspiral were people who had, yeah, a lot of skills and a lot of passion and were in this freelancing mode. Like, okay, I'm going to kind of have to hustle. I'm going to be in the gig economy. I'm going to have to like kind of construct my career out of many different pieces. And it's really difficult to do on your own. You know, it's really exhausting. It's really hard to motivate yourself. It's really hard to build a reputation, to like develop your skills by yourself. But when you've got other people to support you, then it suddenly the equation becomes, yeah, a lot more satisfying. When you've got some sense of, I've got colleagues. We might not be in one company where we share the same legal identity, but we are in the same co-working space. So we at least have some sense of connection and solidarity with each other. I think that's a big part of the magic ingredients of Inspiral, is the freedom of being a freelancer, but the solidarity of being in some kind of team.
So you describe Inspiral as a community. What's expected of you if you become part of Inspiral?
Yeah, the community aspect is so important. Community are the people that will bring you soup when you're not well, you know? And I think that's the foundation of what's happening at Inspiral, is people who are committing to each other. Like, I'm going to do what I can to support you in your pursuit of meaningful work. And the expectation is that you're going to return the favor, you know, that we're in a relationship of mutual engagement.
To what extent can you actually replicate what Inspiral is doing around the world? Surely there's a big question mark that hangs over this, right?
I have to answer that first by saying, we made Inspiral for us, you know, for our needs and for our context. We didn't make it for like, oh, how can we change the world, or how can we fix employment for everyone? But I hope that there are some lessons in there that can still translate, you know. It's about a culture. It's about a commitment to relationship and about showing up for each other. And that is what I find can be in short supply in my travel, especially in my travel around Europe. That sense of social fabric is not really there. People are much more isolated. People have got a sense that it's kind of on them, maybe them and their immediate family, but a lot of people don't really feel they've got a wider community of support. Before we get to these technical arrangements about how do we share money or how do we make decisions, it's like, how do we be in relationship with each other? How do we be community? How do we show up for each other? That to me is the bottleneck. That's the missing piece. That's the bit that's actually really difficult.
Here in the UK, if the forecasters are right, we are facing an absolute tsunami of unemployment, and one that we haven't seen for many years. And I hear you about community and learning to build relationships and all these things. But is Inspiral enough to either help create jobs for people in a really tough jobs market, or at the very least protect them in some way?
It's not enough, no, by no means. I don't expect that this is a solution for the coming wave of unemployment that's going to roll around the world. I really don't. I just hope that there's some inspiration in there. We need to have some big, serious conversations about how we rethink work. The world of work that I was educated and trained for just doesn't exist. Like, it's not relevant to me and my peers, and I don't know what it's like for people younger than me. And we have to have the imagination to think about what are some different arrangements for doing all the things that work does, which is partly about the economy, but it's also about people's identity and their sense of connection and meaning.
We're reaching the point where it's time to weigh up our ideas, and we're going to be putting them to people who might use them if they were up and running here in the UK. But before that, let's hear again from Gemma Tetlow, the chief economist at the Institute for Government, for her thoughts on our two possible solutions. So Gemma, you just heard Wendelin describe how Kurzarbeit works, and it sounds really familiar, doesn't it? It sounds a lot like the furlough scheme that the Chancellor introduced here for the crisis.
Rishi Sunak undoubtedly modelled the coronavirus job retention scheme, the furlough scheme in the UK, on the German Kurzarbeit model. These kind of schemes keep workers tied to their previous jobs. That is a really good thing if you think that their job has temporarily gone away, but we do want them to go back to the job they had before once the economy is back up and running again. The danger of these schemes is that they leave workers tied into jobs that are never going to come back at all.
Inspiral, a freelance collective that started in New Zealand, they say they rely on their members to have a lot of get up and go, to be entrepreneurs. What do you make of that idea?
Particularly if we think, or we end up finding, that the coronavirus period has very much shifted the way that the economy is going to need to operate, there is going to be a need for businesses and for people to find new opportunities, new ways of making money in that changed world. And therefore, the idea of supporting people who can spot those opportunities and take advantage of them seems like a very good one.
So, which solution to unemployment can work in an economy that could face mass unemployment? To help figure that out,
are Matt Blades and Nancy Potts, both unemployed, who you heard just at the start of this programme, and Atin Anadkat, a small business owner. He runs Positive Kitchen in Leicester, which makes artisanal gluten and dairy-free foods. Atin, can I come to you first? You're an employer of a small startup. You've managed to keep going throughout the pandemic without laying staff off and, interestingly, without any help from the government. Could a scheme similar to the German one, Kurzarbeit, have worked for you?
We've been really lucky. Okay, we lost our primary market overnight, which was the food service sector, but we worked tirelessly to find a new one. If we hadn't have found that, I can imagine a German scheme would have been really, really effective at helping us keep our team together. Entering and looking for more staff and retraining it's hard work and it's expensive.
Matt, you've been out of work for nearly 5 months now. You were a pilot with Flybe. Do you think Kurzarbeit could have helped you stay in work?
I think there is a chance that it could have saved our jobs if 6 months ago we started taking slight reduction in hours. We may have been able to weather this storm and I could still be in a job now.
Now, Nancy, you're someone who's never had a permanent job. Does Kurzarbeit appeal to you?
For selfish reasons, the way it appeals to me is that there would be less competition for the new jobs that eventually trickle out coming out of coronavirus.
Atin.
Right now in furlough, you've got all these people that aren't allowed to do anything. And how does that affect them? You know, feeling helpless, feeling away from everything they know for 40, 50 hours a week.
Matt.
Atin makes a very good point about the mental health elements. Because in aviation, we're so used to working in a team, having that team around you to then having no one there is a massive strain on people's mental health. And we've seen a big rise in potential mental health issues within the aviation industry because of this pandemic.
There's a very much a hire fire culture that we have in this country. And zero-hour contracts and the gig economy are prime examples of that. I think we need to address how we look at jobs as a culture.
Keeping that in mind, let's move on then to idea number two. Inspiral, the freelance collective. Now, Atin, you're an entrepreneur. I'm going to guess that Inspiral is the kind of thing that might appeal to you. Am I right?
Yeah, 100%. I really like collaboration, being in charge of my own destiny. And ultimately, we've all got skills that we may not necessarily think could earn us money, but chances are they probably can, right?
Matt, do you think Inspiral could help someone like you?
I struggle to see where Inspiral or a collective working would help for me. I'm not going to be able to go out and start my own airline. But as a wider perspective, looking at the support that you could get from a collective and also the mentorship, I can see that being used for people who are of that ilk and of that nature.
I think to look to the traditional models of employment, to look to the state and say, well, this is the way it's always been, it feels quite risky to me.
Nancy, what are your thoughts on changing attitudes to work?
I think that starting with a company at 20 and then retiring when you're 65, having stayed with the same company, sounds absolutely lovely, but it's a pipe dream. There's no way that was ever going to happen for me.
I feel that when I joined the industry, my idea in my head was the very traditional model. I would always be a pilot for the 45 years. Because of what's happened, it does make me reassess. Is the traditional model now completely gone?
But equally, it's because of that traditional type of work that you and your family invested tens of thousands of pounds in your training.
Exactly.
So we've come to the point where we've now assessed some of the pros and cons, but which one do you think will save and create jobs here in the UK? Atin, Matt, Nancy, I'm now going to pop out and leave you to decide, and then I'll be back in a few minutes to hear your verdict.
So for me personally, I can see the benefit of Inspiral from the standpoint that they may be able to help someone like me find that key idea within.
I suppose, Matt, you like many others in your industry, you're at a tough crossroads, aren't you? Because you either stay absolutely committed mm-hmm. to the end game and the end goal, that kind of feels that, look, eventually it will come back, we'll all jump on planes and we'll all go on holiday, and it's a question of when as to if. Effectively, how deep are your pockets to be able to sit that out, right?
Precisely.
Sometimes a state coming in and helping clearly makes sense. Nancy, what do you think?
So I'm team neutral. I'm sorry, you have to convince me.
Well, I think that it depends on the industry as to which scheme works better.
The interview about Inspiral, what the interviewee did say is that he didn't think that Inspiral would be enough in our current situation with coronavirus mowing down so many jobs.
When I came in today, I was very much thinking that Kurzarbeit was the better of the two schemes. You both pointed out things that I just completely hadn't thought about with Inspiral.
Similarly with me and Kurzarbeit for you, actually.
Yeah, you started to change my mind. And whilst I would say I'm still leaning towards Kurzarbeit, holistically, I can see more benefit from Inspiral for helping to create jobs and get people back in employment, whereas I feel Kurzarbeit would help keep people in employment. And unfortunately, I think that boat has now sailed in this pandemic.
Hello, I'm back in the room. How are you all?
Yeah, feeling good. Eyes have been opened in different directions.
So, end of the programme. Got to ask you the big question. Who's going to deliver the verdict, first of all?
We've decided it was me because I said I would.
Which idea do you believe could ease a looming unemployment crisis here in Britain, Inspiral or Kurzarbeit?
We have eventually decided on Inspiral.
Empowering individuals to fight against corporate organisations, that's it.
I mean, do we put that on the side of a van and write? You can imagine it in the font.
I have to say, I'm actually quite surprised. It looks as though you've chosen the small, agile work creation scheme dependent on self-starters as your big solution. Atin, Matt and Nancy, thank you very much indeed for your time. Next week on Positive Thinking, we ask, how can we diversify the top ranks of professional football management in Britain and apply those solutions elsewhere? If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can at positive.thinking@bbc.co.uk. Goodbye for now.
Positive Thinking was